This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with my co-host Fiona June Thiessen and Mark Thiessen, once again co-hosting with us as well. On this Thursday, February 12th, 2015, just 2 days before Valentine's Day, today we thought we would talk about something that's a little bit more specific to the whole concept of the Law of Attraction, which is the concept of alignment. Abraham Hicks talked quite a bit about being in alignment in the vortex, that kind of thing, where the more in alignment you are with source energy, the better you feel, the more you're able to attract good things into your life. The less that you're in alignment with it, the more that you're into negative emotion territory, things go wrong, you feel like you're paddling upstream, and so on and so forth. So today's topic is, if you're out of alignment, how do you get back into alignment? And it's an appropriate topic today because off mic just before we started the show, Yoona was commenting that she was looking outside her window at a nice sunny sunscape, whereas I'm looking out at snow because I'm part of the New England crowd who've been hit by all the snow lately. So what an appropriate way to start just by looking at the weather.
Yes. Yeah, it's hard to believe that, you know, more than half the country it has snow right now when we're here in Florida. So yes, definitely. I wish I could send you some sunshine.
Well, why don't you send us some sunshine vicariously just by describing it? Because, I mean, just hearing something, I mean, we could choose, of course, to feel jealous about it. But on the other hand, we could choose to just kind of take it as an opportunity to imagine and to visualize. So help us visualize. What's it like right now with beautiful sunny weather and so forth?
Oh, it's gorgeous because, you know, it's like, you know, just before 10 o'clock. So it's not, you know, too hot or, you know, it's just beautiful.
Too hot.
And it's I know. It actually got really hot yesterday, believe it or not. It's kind of strange. But, yeah, so right now the sun is shining on all the leaves. And, you know we're in the tropics, so there are lots of green everywhere. And the sun is, some of the trees, the leaves have kind of a reflective thing to it.
Yeah, they kind of glow in the sunlight, you know.
Yeah.
The morning sunlight is slanting in at a sharp angle. Makes everything look brilliant.
Right, and we're looking outside at a pool down on the first floor, and so you can see the water so clearly from the sunshine. Makes me want to just go and jump in.
Yeah, the sky is perfectly blue and clear right now this morning.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Okay, well, you're helping me to visualize. This is good. Much better than what I'm seeing outside with temperatures around 20 degrees and roughly a foot and a half on the ground and snowflakes in the air. Definitely an improvement there.
But is the sun shining at least over there?
No, it's cloudy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, New England is not... unless you're a skier, New England is not the happiest place to be right now.
Ah, I see.
So that's why visualization is so important.
Does the snow look clean and pretty?
It does at that, yes. That is the good side. You're right, because you can find the beauty even in the stuff that isn't quite what you want.
Right, definitely, yes. I'm enjoying your pictures from down here.
It's actually appropriate.
Just like I used to do when I was in Trinidad, you know, I saw the pictures of the snow, you know, on the TV or on postcards or something, and it always looked beautiful. Of course, I could never imagine how cold it was because I had never experienced that. So
right.
To me, it was always just beautiful.
It is, yeah, especially when it's clean and, you know, isn't covered with all the gunk that kind of piles up with all the salt and so forth. But, yeah, when the snow is nice and clean and white, it does look beautiful. It looks like fairy tale or something.
It does, exactly.
Of course, the fairy tale turns into the movie Frozen by the time you're done, but still.
Yes.
But interesting, there was a quote that came across. Abraham Hicks has this daily email quote they send out, and today's quote kind of fits in nicely with what we're talking about. Of course, they're always writing about this anyway, but today it's particularly good. It says, "This is always true. What I think and how I feel and what manifests is always a vibrational match. But here's the big kicker. What manifests isn't manifesting instantaneously. So you've got all this buffer of time leeway that makes you sloppy. If you thought a negative thought and a brick would instantly fall on your head every time, you'd clean up your thinking. But you're not here to be right. punished about your thinking. You're here to use your thinking and your focus to create, which is kind of an interesting way to slide by the topic, I think, because
yes.
one of the big sources of confusion for me, particularly early on when I was trying to study all this, was why that delay is there at all.
Yeah.
And that's been quite confusing. There are times when I think I have an explanation of it, other times where I say, well, not so much, but the best I've been able to come up with is we create the delay. We create the delay by being out of alignment. And the more out of alignment okay. we are, the longer the delay. The less out of alignment we are, the less the delay is, which is actually a yeah. good thing. I mean, I think even in the movie The Secret, they made a point of showing how good it is to have a delay, because this guy looks at a postcard of an elephant, and then instantaneously an elephant appears in his living room, which is not what he wanted at all.
Right.
So, you know, so it's probably a good thing to have the delay.
It would actually be very challenging, I would think, to have the world around you changing with your thoughts. It would be chaotic and probably kind of scary.
Well, that's provided you haven't learned how to stay in alignment.
Right, exactly.
So that's the challenge, yeah. Until yeah. you are in alignment all the time, you don't want that. But if you are in alignment all the time, that would be fantastic.
True.
In fact, it occurs to me that, I don't believe in hell, but if hell did exist, hell might be that environment where every single thought instantaneously manifests, and you aren't taught how to deal with it.
Right, yeah, that sounds pretty much like it.
Which is really a bizarre thing, because it means if that were the true description of hell, it means all you have to do is change your thinking, and you're no longer in hell.
Yes, mm-hmm. And then there's some people who actually, you know, believe that and teach that. I've seen writings and quotations that says, you know, yeah, hell is basically what you make it, and there's some people living in hell right now, and there are other people living in heaven right now.
That's why I love this old Far Side cartoon. I remember it from the first time I saw it some 30 years ago or whatever it was. It's a picture of a guy in hell. And there are two devils looking on, obviously in a supervisory role. And there's fire and brimstone all over the place and coals. And this guy's out there with a broom sweeping the floor, whistling with the happiest look on his face. And one devil turns to the other and says, "We just aren't getting through to this guy."
Yeah,
you know, that reminds me of stories like, old stories like Victor... I never remember his name. Victor Frankl. And how he frustrated his prison guards, you know, in over there in the
Auschwitz
camp. And, you know, because he was able to stay happy and graceful and loving, and he realized that, you know, with his mind, he can control his environment and his circumstances and his experience, yeah. And just yesterday, Mark and I were looking at a video of a guy who had been wrongfully imprisoned for 39 years. A murder occurred and the police wanted to solve it quickly. So they found this 12-year-old kid and they basically, you know, cajoled him into saying that, yeah, these guys did it. And 39 years later, that guy who was 12, but now is, you know, 39 years older than that, and was 12 or 39. But anyways, he confessed. He finally couldn't live with it anymore, and he came forward and said, you know, it wasn't true. He lied. They didn't kill anybody. So the guy was released from prison, and he was interviewed, and they asked him, you know, how does he feel about being wrongfully imprisoned? And, you know, he was amazingly so positive and happy and grateful, and you know, he said that, you know, the person who lied, he said, "I completely forgive him. You know, he was a kid when it happened, and he has no blame or remorse." But most importantly, he said, and I quote, "Not because you are in prison means you have to be a prisoner."
Mm.
And I thought, wow.
Yeah, that brings two things to mind.
So, yeah, Yeah, he had really kind of learned how to control his, use his mind to control his experience and his environment, which I thought was powerful. And I thought, this guy's going to be all right.
I would think so. The other story, the one of the Auschwitz prisoner, is that the same story of the guy who was asked by a fellow prisoner why he was so happy, and his reply was, I'm so happy because I'm not them?
Yes. He said that, yeah.
So even in that dire circumstance, he found a reason to be happy, and that's what made it possible for him to behave happily.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is part of the battle.
It is.
The other story reminds me of the story somewhat of Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, that's right.
Because Mandela was, well, depends on how you look at it. From the viewpoint of himself and his supporters, he was wrongly imprisoned. From the viewpoint of the Afrikaners, he was correctly imprisoned. But he basically, while in prison, came to study his prison guards and the people who were keeping him there, and developed some sympathy for them in the midst of horrors.
Yeah.
He still managed to develop some sympathy. So by the time he came out and became president of South Africa soon afterward, his goal at that point was not to punish, but rather to unify under what he called the Rainbow Nation.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing about him is that he is said to have learned forgiveness over that time, you know, and I'm not sure exactly how, but I think he encountered LOA. We know for sure that he read some of Marianne Williamson's reading.
Marianne.
Because when he came out, he, in an interview, he made that quote from Marianne's book, and people have now are now attribute that quote to him. where he says that being small does not serve anyone. Do you remember that quote?
Yeah, and it's not being afraid or small that terrifies us. It's being
our greatness. What we're afraid of. And
yeah,
so he said that, and then, you know, it went around that, you know, he made this amazing quote, but really it's from one of Marianne Williamson's writing. So he definitely was a student of LOA during the time he was in prison, and probably other writings and teachings as well.
Well, we do know that he was also inspired by a Victorian poem called Invictus, because that became the theme of the movie Invictus, which was a story about his role with the rugby victory that South Africa experienced in the mid-1990s. And it's a short poem. Let me read the poem. It's actually a pretty good poem. It says,
okay.
Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced or cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Ah, yes, definitely. LOA is right there, you know. Deliberate creation.
Now, having said that, I do want to make a point. And the point is something that I've learned this past week.
Mm-hmm.
I had a new insight. Again, it was from Esther Hicks. This time, it was from Esther Hicks being interviewed by Oprah Winfrey in 2007,
mm-hmm.
shortly after their book Law of Attraction came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a three-part interview. And, you know, most of the interview was pretty much what I would have expected. But at the end of the second interview, she was the first interview was just with Esther. The second interview, halfway through, she brought Abraham in. So she started channeling Abraham. And at the end of that segment, Abraham offered to explain essentially why it is that people have trouble and where their power comes from and so on and so forth. So Oprah said, yeah, please go ahead. So Abraham started going into his thing. And in the middle of, or toward the end of the little soliloquy, he said something that I had never considered before and struck me as being almost impossible at first glance, but then the more I thought about it, the more I realized, oh my God, it's really true.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that our emotions are not just how we feel in this life and how we react to stuff that goes on around us in our experience in the is of this reality. Mm-hmm. Not only are they things that we're able to control and to change, to basically bend to our own will despite what the reality is, but actually emotions are our response to the call of source energy. And I thought about that phrase. And what made it even more interesting is that they said, if you are out of alignment, the call of source energy sounds like rage.
Wow.
Holy cow. I almost fell out of my chair when I heard that one. Because
that makes sense to me, too.
The obvious implication is that rage or anger or any of the negative emotions are really just our way of interpreting how we receive source energy when we're out of alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of it that way.
That's very interesting.
Isn't it?
That's awesome. Yeah. It really makes clear that when you're in, or when you're out of alignment, or when I think of in your dark thoughts and all that, it's absolute. It feels absolute.
Yeah.
And so no matter what you see, it looks the same. It looks like terror and fear and rage, as he said.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a corollary that goes along with that. That they didn't really say, because unfortunately Oprah cut them off because they were at the end of the time for that second segment, so she had to close off that show. But the corollary that goes along with it is that if it's true that negative emotion or positive emotion are expressions of how in or out of alignment we are with source energy and how we're perceiving, how we're hearing the call. I love that phrase, hearing the call of source energy. If that's what the negative and positive emotions are, then for the first time, I actually understand how I can deliberately treat this whole negative and positive emotion thing as a sort of a control dial to control my state. Because, I mean, I'd heard the whole concept before of this range of a negative and positive emotion and that you get control over it and that's how you can basically control how in or out of alignment you are. But there was a missing element, like, okay, well, yeah, I get that there's this control, but where is it? Where do I grab onto it, right? That was the part that never made any sense to me. Well, this helps me understand what the control mechanism is, how you actually grab the knob. And it goes like this. One of the things that Abraham mentioned in that little bit during the end of that second session was that when you have an emotion come through, especially if it's a negative emotion, let's say you feel anger about something. When you express that anger with being mad, with, you know, either saying that you're mad or you know, screaming it out or just expressing the anger in some way, it reduces, which, of course, psychotherapists know to be true. I mean, that's the basis of much of psychotherapy, is to get the patient to actually admit that they're angry or fearful or whatever it might be, and then to get it out, knowing that when you do so, you desensitize it. You make it less powerful. So it makes sense that that would be true. But that also means there's an implicit control mechanism there, because now anytime you have any kind of emotion, especially a negative emotion, and you want to get yourself into a more positive alignment with source energy where all the good stuff happens, well, all you have to do is take stock of what that current emotion is and express it. And when you do, this is the part that cued it for me. When you do, you move up one level on the emotional scale. That was part of what Abraham pointed out. So if, for instance, you are in extreme depression and you express anger over being in extreme depression, you move up the scale to perhaps, I don't know, frustration or something like that. And then if you express the frustration, you move up the scale to perhaps indifference. And then if you can express the indifference, you move up the scale to perhaps feeling a little tiny bit on the good side. And then if you can express feeling a little bit on the good side, then you move up into the better side, and so on and so forth, up the scale. That's a direct control mechanism.
That's really interesting. Is that what you were telling me about, Yona, somebody had it scaled where anger is the highest negative emotion before you get to...
Yes, that's in that book, the fourth, versus power. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, you remember, you have that book, Walt. Hello?
Which book are we talking about? I'm trying to think what we're talking about.
Oh, Power versus Force?
I don't remember. I could very well have
it. Okay. Power versus Force by Dr. David Hawkins. And, you know, he starts off the book with about giving you instructions how to test yourself, to muscle test.
Okay.
And you can test to determine... whether you're something is increasing your energy or it's reducing your energy, anything, food, music, a room, a person, a thought, anything like that. But anyways, he goes on inside of the book to talk about the different levels of emotions and how, and he actually gives them a point value, like they're worth a certain point, some certain number of points on a scale. And, he has, you know, at the top of the scale is, I forgot what it is like inspiration or something like that. And love and forgiveness is way up there. But at the very bottom of the scale is anger. And so he goes from anger to frustration, depression. So you're going up the scale. So any movement in that direction is actually a good thing. So... Yeah, definitely.
Okay, got to clarify here. You said that anger is at the top of the scale, but you said moving up the scale is a good thing. I think you meant like inverting the scale or something.
No, so anger, sorry, is at the bottom.
Okay.
The anger is the strongest of the negative. It's the weakest.
It's the strongest at the bottom. So it's almost
right.
Like, so love and forgiveness is at the top, and it's worth, like, I don't know, 1,000 points, whereas anger is minus 1,000.
They have points?
Yes, or value or whatever. Yeah, he gave numbers so you can visualize. So anger is like minus 1,000, and then frustration is minus 800, and then
depression
is like minus 500. So you're moving through those negative emotions. You're getting closer to zero, and zero would be like acceptance. And then, you know, you move through acceptance to, I forgot what some of the others one, but until you get to forgiveness and then love and finally to inspiration. That those are the, you know, the emotions that you move through as you're trying to get yourself to a higher level, basically.
And that's actually consistent with what The Secret is taught and what many LOA practitioners have taught and so forth. The thing that made the difference for me was realizing how you move it. How do you move up the scale? And you do it by expressing the current emotion. That's the part that just blew my mind away, because now I knew how to do it.
So I'm curious, though, because, you know, if you're in a public place and you're angry, how would you express that?
Well, obviously, you have to do it kind of within the limitations of social acceptability. I mean, if you're sitting in the middle of a movie theater and you're feeling angry, you don't shout out, "I'm angry!" Because it ruins everybody else's movie experience, you know. But you could certainly do it by, you know, leaving the movie theater and going into the restroom and shouting it there where nobody's going to hear it anyway.
Yeah.
Except the other person who's in the stall next to you or something. you could shout it into a pillow, for goodness sake. You could do almost any way to express it that would be socially acceptable would work. It doesn't matter if you're saying it to somebody else. In fact, it's probably better if you're expressing a negative emotion not to somebody else, because now you're not going to help bring somebody else down, you know, while you're getting yourself out of it.
Yeah.
But the point is just to get it out. And I've actually been trying it for the last day or two, because I only heard this, like, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. So I've tried it a couple times since then, realizing once again that, first of all, it's a major challenge for us whenever we learn one of these new concepts to apply it regularly. And second of all, realizing that, you know what, it really does work. And, you know, we're actually kind of coming up on a break here. Let's take a break. And then after the break, I'll kind of walk through you know, what it's been like to take the steps and how the response has been within myself and so forth, because I have had plenty to be negative about lately, and I've been using this to try to deal with that. So, sound good?
Yes, sounds great.
Yep. All right. This is LOA Today here on PRN. We will be back. Welcome back to LOA Today, Walt and Yuona and Mark, on this Thursday, February 12, 2015, talking about being in and out of alignment and how you can get from out of alignment back to in alignment. And before the break, we were talking about the emotional scale, and Yuona, you did a little digging while we were on break, and you found the specifics of it. What did you find out?
So I found the actual scale that was created by Dr. Hawkins, and so, you know, the book is called Power versus Force. And so he said, he basically calls all the negative emotions force and the positive emotions power. And so there's a chart that divides the force emotions and the power emotions. So at the very bottom of the chart in the force emotions is shame. And it, on the scale, it's a value of 20. And then you move to guilt, which is 30. And apathy, which is 50, grief is 75, you move up to fear, then desire, and anger, and finally pride, actually, is on the negative side of the emotion. And when you finally can change pride into courage, then you're starting into the positive or power emotions, then move up through neutrality, willingness, acceptance, reason, and then you move into love, joy, peace, and finally at the top is enlightenment.
So he considers enlightenment to be a high positive emotion.
Yes, you know, he equates that to pure consciousness, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So have you been feeling enlightened lately?
At brief moments, I have. I actually have. I share those with Mark when I feel like I had gotten a message from God, from the source, from my higher self.
I'm trying to imagine what the feeling of enlightenment feels like, because I've always kind of associated the concept of enlightenment with reason, with you know, awareness and so forth. So I'm trying to wrestle with it, you know, making that an emotion. First of all, that's the hardest part: enlightenment as an emotion, and second of all, is the highest emotion. And I'm thinking, what?
he does describe the emotion with the word ineffable. I'm not sure what that means.
Ineffable. Okay. Well, ineffable is... Well, let's get an actual dictionary definition. I can get that up here pretty quickly. Ineffable is too great or extreme to be expressed or described in words.
That's perfectly... That's it. That's exactly it. That is exactly it. That's why I was thinking, I cannot describe what that feels like, but that's the word, ineffable.
And actually, there's an example in the definition here, which is kind of appropriate considering where you guys are. The example is the sentence, the ineffable, or the phrase, the ineffable natural beauty of the Everglades.
How very appropriate.
Now, I don't know about you, but I don't consider alligators to be, you know, ineffable.
Oh, but alligators are under the water. They're not the most obvious and expression of the Everglades.
Yeah, definitely not.
Oh, so now it's, you're trying to scare me. What's below the surface is what I have to worry about.
No, we send love to the alligators, and they send love to us. But yeah, definitely when you have those moments, you do feel, I know for me, it's been like this amazing calm and wonderful kind of a peace, blissful kind of, oh my goodness, this is awesome. How can I hold on to it? But the minute you try to hold on to it, it goes away.
So
I think the point is
saying,
not to try.
Is that your way of saying you're not quite there yet?
Well, yes, I don't know who is there all the time, but yeah, definitely.
I'm still trying to come to grips with this whole idea of it being an emotion. But
yeah,
it's, well, just, let's quickly go through the emotions at each of the levels. we just read off. So, want to go down?
Better to go up.
Better to go up. All right. Let's go from the very bottom again. So the emotion of shame is humiliation. The emotion of guilt is blame. The emotion of apathy is despair.
I think that's supposed to be despair. It sounds like it's misspelled.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I was trying to, as I said, I was like, what does despair mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
I think so. It's despair. The emotion of grief is regret. The emotion of fear is anxiety. The emotion of desire is craving. The emotion of anger is hate. The emotion of pride is dignity or scorn. That's interesting. Emotion, now into the positive side, the emotion of courage is affirmation. The emotion of neutrality is trust. The emotion of willingness is optimism. The emotion of acceptance is forgiveness. The emotion of reason is understanding. The emotion of love is reverence. The emotion of joy is serenity. And the emotion of peace is bliss. And then we're back up to the emotion of enlightenment is ineffable.
Well, I hope that scale worked for him. I think he's kind of missing the boat on a few things. First, I think joy itself is an emotion. I don't think it needs to have its an emotional description for it to not be an emotion. And it just stands on its own. Same thing for happiness. I also wonder about anger being so high up on the scale toward the positive end. I mean, I can understand how it helps you get toward the positive end, because expressing anger is a way of, as I was talking about before the break, it's a way of helping you move up the scale incrementally. But I would put anger further down. Anger and depression doesn't seem to be on there at all. That's the thing that really surprised me.
Yeah, the thing, you have to read the book to kind of see his definitions of emotions and the levels, because he talks about it in detail in terms of, if I remember correctly, you know, shame and those types of emotions are so inwardly directed that you are actually destroying yourself. And I remember him saying something about those are closer to death on a spiritual level or energy level than is anger, because anger is more outwardly directed and it's more motivating to actually do something about it, where shame and guilt is more debilitating and inwardly directing kind of.
I think he's making an assumption there. He's making the assumption that you express the anger. But any psychotherapist can tell you that one of the biggest problems they have to deal with is people who don't express their anger.
Yeah.
So I think that's
he talks about anger in terms of being an expressed emotion. Definitely.
Yeah. That's probably part of what his definition is. Okay. Well, that makes some sense, I guess. I think I'd still write the scale differently.
Yeah, anger is for him, aggression and antagonistic kind of thing.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's the nice thing about these scales. We can all write them the way we want to, because ultimately we have our own emotional scales anyway. And how we define them is really the only thing that matters, because we're the ones experiencing them. So,
and it's all very cloudy and subjective and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it being subjective. That's
right.
Fine. In fact, the important thing is to know what your own scale is. If you know what your own scale is, then you can at least start working with it. And again, that comes back to the method that I was talking about, the method of expressing whatever feeling you're having and using it to move yourself up one level on the emotional scale. I've been trying to work on that just in the last few days, and a few things I've noticed. One thing I noticed is there are times when I have a hard time identifying what I'm feeling. I can tell that I am feeling something, but classifying it can be tricky. And I figured out a way to deal with that. I'm hoping that over time what I will end up doing is having a better labeling system, so that I'll have a more clear understanding of what each of these emotions are that I feel. But until I know what it is, I usually just classify it as some level of pain. So I think in terms of, I'm going to express pain right now. I feel pain, and I want to get rid of this pain and feel better. And that seems to work. That makes it more easy for me, especially with the negative emotions. Obviously, I wouldn't do that with the positive emotions. But for the negative emotions, when I'm not sure what the emotion is, it still gives me a way to express it. And that's the key thing anyway. It doesn't really matter what you call it. What matters is you got to express it. And as a result of that, by expressing it in some way, I have found a couple of things. First of all, there is some degree of immediate relief, which tells me, yes, I am moving up a step or two on the emotional scale. That's really reinforcing. That told me, wow, this really does work. The second thing that I realized is I have a tendency, and I suspect most people have this tendency, to work my way up one, two, three, maybe four steps on the scale, and then stop.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, if the goal is to reach the top of the positive end of the scale, what I really ideally should be doing is carrying out the exercise to get myself up each step along the way until I get to the very top, which is quite a task. That's quite a task. Now, I have to throw a caveat in here. I had on one occasion so far, now it's only one, and I'm still a relative rookie at this new scale with this new mechanism that I'm describing, but I have had one time where I did try to just put everything else aside and just spend whatever amount of time it was going to take to get myself up all the way to the top, just to see if I could do it. And I ended up stalling out in that case. Well, let's say the scale is negative 10 to positive 10, with 0 being kind of indifference. I probably got up to about plus 4, plus 5, and then I kind of stalled out. So I treated that and felt like that was just, you know, me being not practiced at this yet, and I haven't really gotten good at it. On the other hand, I thought it was phenomenal, because when I did it that one time, I started off at around a minus 5. So I managed to go, like, you know, halfway up the scale in one session, which was far more than I'd ever been able to do before. So I don't want to minimize the accomplishment. But it seems like there are certain thresholds that we individually are going to run into. I don't have the complete answer on what it's going to take to break through on that, but I do know this. It does work, and it's a question of learning how to finish it. And once we learn to finish it, that's where we're going to end up being in the positive zone all the time. Now, maybe you have some insight on that, because you guys have been in that positive vortex for a few months now. How do you see yourself when you're in that mid-positive area?
Well, first of all, as I'm listening to you describe that sounds tedious.
It is a little tedious, yes. Yes. I think,
and I remember listening to Abraham Hicks, Abraham, being channeled by Hicks. And you remember that recording we played in our car? It was like a short discussion they had with an audience. But anyway, she said that, you know, and she was describing being out of alignment as going down the river against the current.
Going upriver.
Up the river against the current, right.
Right.
And she said the goal should be to turn your boat around. And she was basically saying, don't worry about trying to get downstream and get to some point and arrive here and do this. Turn your boat around such that you're no longer fighting the current and you're now in alignment. And what happens is at that time, the current, the force, being in the vortex, all of that kind of helps you along. And
what she means by turning around is to stop the struggle.
Yes.
Because as soon as you're struggling, you're going back upriver again.
Exactly.
She used the same
oars.
That's it. She used the same example in the Oprah interview, and she emphasized exactly that, stop paddling.
Yeah, stop paddling, exactly. And so for me, I guess I've never really tried to get all the way up to a 10. I mean, I've never even thought about it along those lines. But I think for me, it's more about making that switch, turning my board around regularly, than opposed to getting up there once I'm aware of it. And speaking of awareness, you know, you were saying that when you realize that you're in this negative place and you you try to classify the emotion, and you and I forgot the words, but that's a place of power, you know, because once you are making an effort to actually classify the emotion, now you've actually detached yourself from it. Now you realize that it is an emotion and it's not you. And that alone is very powerful.
Okay.
Even if, you know, sometimes you can only get there and realize, you know what, and I've done that. There are times when I say, okay, right now I feel angry, I feel depressed, or I feel frustrated, and that's as far as I get. Just being aware that that's how I feel, and so that alone helps me to realize, okay, yeah, you know, this is what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing right now, and that's all I can do. I can't even, like, change it, really. But that helps me to realize that I'm not the emotion, and that makes me feel like, you know what? And maybe that's part of the expressing it that you were talking about earlier, because I just, like, say, okay, yeah, I'm depressed, or I'm frustrated, and that's it. And then I just kind of let it run its course, and then I gotta get over it, or something, you know, as opposed to trying to change it, because sometimes that is very, very challenging. And that, you know, just trying to change it can make me more frustrated. I just kind of, like, you know, let it go. But over the weekend, we learned a few techniques that helps us get out of resistance and into alignment.
Okay, so tell us about it.
We can share that with you.
Yeah, and just to add what you said, when I do that same thing, and when I remember that, oh, this is just an emotion, that these are, that there's a corresponding chemical flow going through my
right.
body, it just brings back hope into my mind.
Yes.
Even if I can't take the next step right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
I can just, you know, relax into the hope a bit and just see what comes next.
Right, and we try to let the 90 seconds run its course and say, okay, you know, in another 90 seconds, I can try to change this. But right now,
and remind people what the 90 seconds is all about, just in case people haven't remembered what that was, because I know we've talked about it in the past, but people don't necessarily remember.
Yeah, that's from the book, The Stroke of Insight, and I just forgot who the author is. But she, you know, she was a neuroscientist who had a stroke, and you know, recovering from that stroke, she learned a few things, because in the stroke, she lost the use of her left brain, so she was all right brain, and she felt this oneness and connection with source energy. Jill Bolte Taylor, that's her name. And she said that, you know, when you feel a certain emotion, it's actually, there is a biochemical change that happens where you release these enzymes, these hormones, these neurochemicals, and they are going to basically flow through your body, but every 90 seconds there's another pulse of this, whatever this neurochemical soup is. And so basically, if you feel angry, there are certain neurochemicals that are released, and they're going to have a certain effect. And what happens is people tend to want to stay angry for whatever reason, and so they basically initiate another release of that neurochemical through their system. But every 90 seconds, you have an opportunity to change the neurochemicals based on your emotions, based on your thoughts. You can change the neurochemicals that are flowing through your system.
Which is very powerful, to know you have that opportunity every 90 seconds.
Yes, it is very powerful.
I believe the reason we have a tendency to want to stay in some negative emotion is because we believe it's important.
Yes, that's true. We believe it's important also.
For our survival, somehow.
Most of the time, we are addicted to those neurochemicals, and that's a whole other discussion.
Well, actually, it's part of the discussion in one sense, but tell us more about what you picked up over the weekend, some of the tips you picked up for getting yourself back into alignment, so to speak.
Okay, yeah, we re-listened to Anthony Robbins recently on a drive, and he, in that talk, he was talking about his neuro-associative conditioning. What would you describe, how would you describe that? Is it a process? Is it a...
So it's like a conditioning, a training of your mind, yeah, kind of thing.
Is that like the NLP that he's pushed for all these years, neuro-linguistic programming?
Exactly, yeah, so it's based on neuro-linguistic programming principles. So what he says is that the neuro-associative conditioning is that when you have a depressive thought or feeling or experience, whatever, he says basically you have to interrupt that pattern. And, you know, Tony Robbins, he says, you know, do something crazy, shock yourself, scream, run, jump, do whatever it is to shock yourself. He said that, he used the example of, you know, when something happens like that, you just jump to your feet and say, thank God my feet don't stink today.
Yeah. And he also told a brief story of a client he had one time in his office who came in and started to break down and cry as she described, started to tell her story. And he shouted at her, stop right there, we haven't started yet.
Yeah, no, yeah, and he really screamed and said, stop right there. Excuse me, we have not started yet. And that interrupted their whole thought of depression. And then
and she apologized, you know, compose yourself. And he goes, that proves that you have control.
You can't stop it.
It's kind of an extreme version, but it sounds very much like what I was talking about earlier, because basically the expression of the feeling reduces and desensitizes it, makes it go away.
Right, yes. And then he said you have to then create a new empowering alternative, a new pattern. You have to install a new idea, a new feeling. So it's kind of, we've talked about this before, what Abraham Hicks called it, what is that? I forgot. But anyways, he's saying to get a new thought, a new idea, and replace it, or try to replace it. So you whenever you have the depressed thought, you interrupt it, you try to generate a new feeling in yourself and feel it, like not just think it, but feel it, and then reinforce that pattern, like run that program, run that show, run that visual, run that audio for you, because I know you're not visual, over and over again. Like he said, every time it happens, run it 10, 12 times and do that throughout the day until you have actually created a new pattern and you've now conditioned yourself for a new response, basically, to the experience.
Yeah, that's a good point. The idea of replacing, not just trying to not do, but rather replacing.
Exactly.
And of course, when you're expressing a negative emotion, it's not really that you're not doing it. You're trying to express it to get rid of it. But yeah,
right.
So much better if you can, now that you've created a sort of a mini vacuum, if you can fill that vacuum with something better. That's really going to be very powerful.
That is important. Yeah, we realize, the whole reconditioning of ourselves, because you know that's part of our problem. We're conditioned wrongly. And so the task now is to replace that conditioning with something more positive, something more enlightening.
Right. And one of its related techniques for doing that is many of our negative experiences are the result of past experiences that we remember that are triggered by something happening in the present. And to deal with that, he says, whatever that, at the moment, whatever that past experience is, if you can remember it, or is to review that negative experience. Change it in your mind. Turn it into something ridiculous. He said, specifically, he said, for instance, imagine, let's say you're dealing with some person who made you really angry, who hurt you somehow, and instead of just remembering it as you remember it, change it with, turn it into like a cartoon and change the person's face with, what do you say, rainbow colors?
Yes, and psychedelic.
Mickey Mouse ears.
And voice and all that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah, and speed it up and play it backwards and just kind of mix it all up in your mind so it's silly and ridiculous and meaningless.
Yeah, so you're trying to scramble that pattern and change so you don't have the same response. And because what we do is, when something like that happens, we replay it in our mind over and over again. So now, when it happened to us first, it may have had one effect, but then we strengthen that effect and we reinforce that effect so that it now becomes even more devastating every time we think about it. So we have to undo that and reverse that pattern, basically.
So basically, grab yourself by the crotch and talk falsetto.
Yeah.
Oh boy, this snow looks so wonderful!
Yeah, it's funny, but it works. It's you know, whatever it takes.
I'm fascinated by the fact that you said earlier, when you were talking and responding to the technique I described, that it sounded tedious, and then you went on to describe a technique where you're shocking yourself. I mean, the contrast is really quite striking.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't shock. I don't do the shock part. That's
oh, okay.
I just interrupt the pattern, basically.
So,
yeah,
because
okay. That brings me to another one that we also learned, and this is from your favorite book, Tongue in Cheek. Excuse me, your life is waiting.
Oh yes.
And
okay.
And she talked about she has this 30-day plan where you every single day you decide on some aspect of yourself, something about yourself that you're going to appreciate, whatever that is, whether it's your hair, your eyes, or your personality, whatever it is, but it has to be something about yourself. And when you are stressed out or worried about something and it keeps, you know, coming to the forefront of your mind, every time it does, you go back to that thing that you're appreciating about yourself. And you do that all day long. And then the next day you choose something else. And you do that for 30 days. And she described that as so like going through a withdrawal program. I mean, she got physically sick. And she even went to the doctor and they told her, I'm trying to remember what she was saying, but it was actually the symptoms of something that would happen to someone who was getting off an addicted drug.
Wow.
And she realized that the neurochemistry of her body was changing based on this practice, and it makes complete sense. And she said, you have to do it, and you're going to get sick, and you're going to feel like, you know, toxins leaving your body, and you're going to get the flu and all that kind of stuff. It really is an amazing way to change your biochemistry, to change your brain, and to change your life. Yeah, I liked that one. And I've been practicing it. I mean, I did it for 2 days, and then I stopped, and now back to it. So I'm trying to get 30 days in straight, because I really want to experience that withdrawal symptoms.
Have you actually been experiencing the withdrawal symptoms? First of all, I'm amazed that you want to experience them. But secondly, have you actually experienced them?
So you want the validation.
Yes, I want the validation that my biochemistry is changing.
Okay.
And yeah, and so you're going to feel like a craving for these negative emotions, but you have to work through that, because then on the other side, you feel different. You feel like something has changed, something has happened, you know?
Well, I guess perhaps I must be in a better place than I thought, because I don't crave those negative emotions at all. I want them gone.
No, I'm not craving the negative emotions at all. No, what I'm saying is when you get to that place, when you are craving it, you know that something is happening, that it's leaving your system.
Oh, that's true. Sure, it's a feedback mechanism.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. Well, listen, I'm sad to say this, but we've actually finished up our allotted time for this week. You got one more little tidbit you want to say before we say goodbye?
Sure. Going back to trying to change your emotion, of course, for me, feeling grateful is always one that helps a whole lot, you know, and if I can express gratitude, that helps me to get back into alignment almost immediately.
Yeah, that's the silver lining concept. Instead of focusing on the bad thing, focus on whatever good thing you can find there and appreciate that part.
Yeah.
That was the first thing we did this morning, was writing our gratitude books, just things we feel grateful for as soon as we woke up.
Yep.
And it helps lift you right out of anything that might be lingering from sleep time that's negative.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great. Well, listen, this has been a good conversation, as usual, digging into how to get yourself back into alignment when you're out of alignment. And I just want to thank you for all your insights, and we'll carry on the conversation next week.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.